speaking of art, of visual symphonies, of, well, I don't know if you'd describe them as masterpieces yet, but they certainly caught my eye. I'm talking about the work of my first guest, Tom White. He's an artist. He's interested in using artificial intelligence to draw. And I've actually, he directed me to his website, drib.net. That's spelled DRIB.net. And Perception Engines, I think, is the work that caught my eye. And these were all drawn by machines powered by artificial intelligence. But Tom can explain this much better than me. He's in the studio now. Kia ora, Tom.
Kia ora.
Great to have you on. Now, tell me, you could just get a machine to take a photo and then to draw a sketch from the photo. But this is not what you did. It's not imitation. It's something else. Can you explain it? Because you can see I'm grasping here.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks, Brian. What I was interested in is what these machines really see when they do recognize something. So we have these smarter systems now, which, you know, they're trying to put in self-driving cars and they're trying to put in intelligent systems. But even in the science community, it's not really, there's a lot of debate on what they can and can't do. And so I decided that I was interested in this problem from an artistic point of view, and I wanted to see what can we allow the computers to draw what it is they think they see or what it is they think they understand.
Well, there's a couple of things in there already. First off, because I've already forgotten the first thing I was going to ask you, the second thing was think. Now, machines think. They're thinking. Now, are they thinking like us?
I don't think so at all. I think that a lot of times we struggle for how to describe what these systems are capable of, and we use words that are familiar to us.
Yes.
But the fact is that these systems can tell a cat from a dog, and that seems easy for us, but 10 or 20 years ago, the computers couldn't do that. The question is how are they doing it? Are they using the textures? Are they using the shape? Are they using other things? And this is where there's a lot of debate. And what my artwork explores is what are the qualities of the image that seem to trigger these systems?
Well, you pointed out that we have AI in driverless vehicles, and it's very important that whatever is driving that machine recognizes the difference between, say, an oncoming car, a road, a clear road, a pedestrian, all those things. If it can't tell the difference, then it's not fit for purpose, is it?
That's right. So there's some mission critical systems like that. More pedestrian, we have similar systems that protect our email from spam, so that you know, if someone sends us lewd images, it tries to not have those end up in our inbox. But those are systems that you can also kind of trigger in strange ways. So you can send those abstract shapes, and I've done a series where just by making sort of abstract shapes, you can trigger systems based on what they're trying to recognize.
One assumes that you can program artificial intelligence, say using the driverless car idea again. There'll be a camera, and one can program in various shapes and say, well, if one sees ahead a clear road, then one can proceed. If one sees, it teaches the machine that a person in front of the vehicle means the vehicle has to stop. I mean, is it just a case of lots and lots of programming to do this? Lots of code?
It is, but equally important is lots and lots of examples. And these examples are collected by people, and people are making assumptions and sometimes mistakes. So let's go to a more clear, cut-and-dry example for the self-driving cars. You really want it to know what a stop sign is,
yeah,
like before it can handle, like it needs to recognize it. And these systems can recognize a stop sign, but what is it triggering on? Is it the color? Is it the octagon shape? Is it something about the... And this is important because it has security implications, because if it's something very subtle and someone can modify the sign in some way that people don't recognize, you can actually cause the car to think it sees a stop sign where it doesn't, or, you know, in reverse, thinks it's not a stop sign. So these sort of cut and dry things for us, there's a lot of edge cases, and it all boils down to these examples that people collect. There's problems with the examples. These are called machine learning bias or selection bias, where some of the examples aren't exactly uniform or doesn't match our expectations of what we intended for the concept to be that we're trying to get it to recognize.
You talked about learning, the machines learning. learning through examples that a human might give the machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell me, because I know in your writing about your work, you talk about neural networks, and that's an important part of computing. What is a neural network when it comes to a machine?
Sure. So a neural network is a model based on human neural circuits, but it's very abstract, and it doesn't capture all of the qualities. So you can think of it as inspired by real neurons, but beyond that, it's not very faithful to the original. In essence, it's a mathematical model that it learns how to recognize patterns. And so if we feed the system enough examples, it can on its own build up these patterns. Now, neural networks, the big innovation in the last 5 or 10 years are what are called deep neural networks. What is that and how is that different? The deep neural networks just have more layers, which means they can learn. It's not that they're triggering on one or two things. They can trigger on a combination of things in order to come up with their conclusion.
Now, I'm thinking about this as you answer that question, and I've drawn for myself a very crude stop sign. And I'm thinking, yes, what is it that the machine is, because it could learn to stop at the word stop? But sometimes the word stop put together, they might be part of another word. They might be part of a longer name. And saying the machine stops the car for no reason at all. It could be because of the red, as you said. It could be the shape of the sign. So the computer has to learn am I right in saying the computer has to learn when the combination is correct? And again, if it gets it wrong, it could be fatal.
That's right. And you don't want, you know, someone sticking a sticker on the stop sign to cause it to change its mind. So it has to have a pretty robust idea. And it's based on the examples that we give it. And as an example of how this ties into the artwork itself, you were talking about the perception engines. There's one in there that's a measuring cup. And this is a common measuring cup that you might have in your kitchen. Now, if you look at the image that it created, it chooses the shapes and the colors, and it chose this crazy bright green color for the measuring cup, which I've never seen a measuring cup like that. And so I actually looked at the data set, and the reason that it chose that is because there's something called selection bias. So someone was collecting images of measuring cups from the internet to teach the computer what a measuring cup is, but it turns out there's a lot of people that collect this rare kind of glass called Depression-era glass, and it has uranium in it, and it glows green, and it's just crazy stuff that people collect. But because people collect it, they brag about it, and they put it online. And long story short, there's a lot of images of these weird measuring cups online.
Now, hang on there. So Tom, where did your machine, because this was your machine that drew this, so where did it get access to all these images of green measuring cups that glow with uranium?
That's a good question. So part of what... Part of this is where the data sets come from. This particular one was based on a common machine learning data set called ImageNet. And ImageNet is a research data set. And so there were 1,300 images of measuring cups collected from the internet.
You didn't put down, like, it's not like an art class where, say, this cup here, you put it on the table and say, draw that to the kids. You didn't say that to the machine, draw this.
That's one way that you can do it. But in this case, no, because I'm more interested in kind of its abstract idea of what an object is absent of any input. So, and because this is how these systems work. So the system thinks, and another thing about these systems, yes, how do I know that they're working? I can take these and show them to Google or Amazon's AI systems, and it will similarly think that it sees these same things, often because it has the same biases that from training. But it's not me showing it one image. It's it being fed thousands of images,
right.
And those images have to be collected automatically.
And not an image in the room that your machine with a little camera then draws or with a painting apparatus. How did you then ask your artificial intelligence to make a drawing?
That's a tricky endeavor because... you know, the systems themselves can tell you whether they recognize something. So, for example, in my latest exhibition, ants, there are systems that know whether they're looking at certain insects and specifically certain kinds of ants. So the drawing system I made was kind of a drawing system for the neural networks. They can update the image or change the image and move the brush strokes around until they're very convinced they're looking at an ant. And so... they're choosing the color, they're choosing the placement of the lines, and they're doing it in a way where they're more and more convinced that, that they think they're drawing an ant. If that means. Basically, if the system knows how to see something and knows how to score it, it can draw what it thinks will give it the highest score.
And what kind of painting equipment does your machine have? Is it a funny little robot with mechanical arms, or is it a 3D printer? Be a 3D printer. Is it a printer?
In my case, I actually do all the printing. So there are AI artists. There's a trove of us that do have different techniques. But actually, I wanted to take the mechanics of the printing out of the equation. And so what the neural networks or the computer does in my case is it imagines how the print will come out on paper and in certain inks, but it's me screen printing it in the end.
Okay.
So it plans it as layers of ink, and it's subject to constraints of screen printing. Like, you can't reproduce the colors exactly, or the alignment might be a little bit off, but it's me that actually executes that at the end.
Did you write into the software starfish, for example? There's a picture of a starfish, a drawing of a starfish. Did you write in starfish and hit run, and the machine goes off and eventually comes back with an image which it calls a starfish?
That you can do on the latest systems, but I did that 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, the state of the art was you really had to boil down and pre-bake all of these concepts into the neural network. So you can't sort of show up and say, draw a starfish. You actually have to say, first, I'm going to tell you the 100 or 1,000 things you will need to know how to recognize, and then we will specialize. So in fact, I found networks that were already trained on starfishes as one of the things that they knew. And it's important to point this out because they know about some things but don't know about other ones. For example, the networks didn't know about the human ear or the human eye or other certain concepts, but they did know about, through the training sets, a starfish and other sea life.
In other words, the artificial intelligence, are you working off the cloud here, not just what's in your own computer in terms of it's as much, the machines have access to the World Wide Web, right?
They do, and I am using that. So in the end, the drawings that are produced are tested against cloud services like Amazon and Google, and those also generally concur in what they're seeing. So the online systems, it's not that I'm drawing something that one computer thinks is an ant or thinks is a certain object. It's something that computers in general that are trained in this way will recognize as that object.
And the more they try, the more they learn, right?
That's true to an extent, but oftentimes what you learn through the artwork is what they don't know. So imagine being trained on knowing what an ant is, but only seeing images of an ant, never seeing one in motion, never even really being trained on what it means to be alive and not alive. This is the way these systems are trained, and so it doesn't really know how the pieces fit together oftentimes, or even that an ant can't sort of break apart into two or three different parts and still be an ant. So I think there's limitations in how these things are trained that comes through in the images it produces.
The images that I've got, drib.net, by the way, and I'm sure we've got access also to Tom White. Tom White is my guest, by the way, an artist who specializes in artificial intelligence and the art it can produce. One of the things in drib.net perception engines is there are these black marks, which I assume, well, to me, they look like the machine is trying to show movement. Is that correct?
It's interesting you ask because I don't have a privileged view of what it does. In fact, I often have to take guesses at what it's doing after the fact. So it may be that it's trying to show movement. It may be that some of the images are blurry that it was trained on. But oftentimes what I end up doing is scratching my head and going back to look at the training set that it was trained on and saying, okay, this looks like what it was trained on. I can kind of see what it's doing here. So I think it's a reasonable guess, but I would have to look at the particular image in the training set to know myself.
What are some of the things, the blow dryer and the iron, interestingly, are the ones that I think, the cabbage. The cabbage is I mean, I would know that. I would say that's a cabbage when I saw that. The hammerhead shark, not so much. The cello is really interesting because there appears to be a cellist, but the cellist is a funny shape.
That's true. So this is a network that wasn't trained on humans or on people, and so it doesn't really know what people are. It knows more what objects are, and then it kind of has a stand-in shape for people. But even the iron and, say, the binoculars, there's some subtle things. Like when it's drawing the iron, it drew it in a profile view. And I think that's because that's maybe the most distinctive angle to which a view of iron is coming from the side. But the binoculars, you'll notice they were drawn at sort of quarter view, where you can kind of see the front but also see the side. So I think kind of decisions that implicit decisions it's making about what direction to look at the object in to sort of kind of highlight its features are also interesting in those.
For you, what's the most interesting thing about this? Actually exploring what machines might be able to create, or is this more of a mirror on ourselves?
It's very much, I think, a mirror on ourselves. I think that I am interested in what the computer sees, and I'm interested in, a lot of art is driven by the internal world of the artist. And here I'm trying to explore the internal world of these machines that can perceive. But really, ultimately, it boils down to what we train them and how we train them. And even the concepts themselves, that what we say is a cat and isn't a cat, or is a cello and isn't a cello. It's us making those decisions, and everything else flows kind of downstream from that.
Well, an interesting thing, again, for me, is that we don't really know, if I understand you right, Tom, we don't know what the machines are thinking. We can guess, we can surmise, but we don't know exactly what they're thinking.
That's exactly right. And even more surprising, even the experts don't know. So my artwork is very popular with, say, cognitive scientists and that cadre of people, because it's an interesting window into what triggers these systems. And oftentimes the only way you can kind of diagnose or understand what they're seeing is kind of through these triggers that seem to elicit responses.
It, to me, also underlines the marvelous mystery as to human thought in the first place. So complex. We take it for granted, but it is the actual act of thinking is miraculous almost.
And that's been kind of something we've learned over and over in artificial intelligence, is things that seem hard are easy, and things that seem easy are hard. So, it was 30 years since we developed expert chess-playing systems, but it took 20 more years before we could make a system that could tell a dog from a cat. So these things that we take for granted are actually very, very hard, but we don't have we aren't privy to knowing how we do them, and we don't really think about it on a conscious level, so they seem instinctual to us. But these things that are easy for us are the things that the systems now are getting better at.
Now tell me, Tom, what art have you gone on at the moment? What are you showing at the moment? The exhibition at Thistle Hall, isn't it?
That's right. So at Thistle Hall, opening tomorrow, I have an exhibition called Ants, which is all about how these systems see ants. And one of the interesting things to me is that these systems can recognize ants kind of as a strong silhouette profile. So they don't need a lot of shading, a lot of subtle information, just like a strong high contrast image, and they'll recognize what they think is an ant. But as I said before, they don't have any knowledge of how an ant moves. They weren't trained on video. They were only trained on images of ants. So oftentimes, to me, these ants end up looking disjointed or fragmented because they still sort of have the qualities of the legs or the qualities of the body parts that these systems trigger on. So this is running this week at Thistle Hall through Sunday.
What next for you, Tom? Do you eventually want to leave the machines to themselves?
No, actually what I want to do is build a body of work. And a lot of what I'm doing is kind of riding along with the advances in artificial intelligence. So we already talked about how you asked if you could just show up and have a system draw a starfish for you. And you can now, but 2 years ago you can't. So the systems are evolving very quickly. And I'm interested in kind of tracking that. And as the systems get better and smarter and more adept, it's kind of revealing that world that they see through artwork that they're ultimately helping to produce.
Tom, it's been fascinating talking with you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Brian.
That's Tom White, artist working with artificial intelligence. His latest work, he and his team on machines, is getting its opening at Thistle Hall in Wellington tomorrow. It's on ants, and it's called Ants.